Welcome, welcome back to Conversations with Lila B. We know it's been a minute since we released an episode, but we're back with a brand new season. So sit back and join the conversation. Today's guest on Conversations with Lila B is a two-time guest on the podcast. She was previously on to talk about her content creation journey under the name Your Lover in All Things Nice. And today, Thokozile Ngwenya is back to discuss her publishing debut, a Zambian children's book entitled Bedtime Stories from the Kafue National Park. This book is a collection of four short stories, and I just have to tell you, it's absolutely magical. Your children are going to love it. You're going to love it. So let's sit back and join the conversation. Welcome to Conversations with Lila B. Thoko. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. It's a beautiful sunny day, so you know I can't complain. We're having some good weather, albeit it might be a little bit too hot, but yeah. So I'm so happy to have you back on the podcast so we can talk about your writing journey, publishing your first book. I mean, I'm so excited for Bedtime Stories from the Kafue National Park, and I can't wait for everyone to get excited about it and hear more about it. But first, could you share a little bit about how and when you discovered that you could write?
Interesting question. I don't know if I have a particular point where I can say that I discovered I could write. What I can say is that it was a graduation of events, one leading to another. But socially, I discovered I could write when my friends would reach out to me to prepare like texts, paragraph letters to share with their significant others. That's
oh,
the truth.
Wow. Shots fired. I wonder who these people are.
People you know. No names mentioned.
You just had a way with words.
Yes.
Language.
Yes, because, and it wasn't just one friend. It would be like, I want to communicate this to them. It's their birthday coming up. Can you write me a message? We argued. Can you put my, can you put these thoughts into like a cohesive manner? Mm. And that's the truth socially. And I was like, this, it's more than one friend now. This is more than three friends.
Wow.
So I used to write that, but more so professionally, it was at work when I was asked to do case studies that were happening in the field, field experiences, putting that together for, it was a sort of like a newsletter magazine, and that was received quite well by work and the funders. And everybody started saying, look, I know you're into data science and statistics and all of these numbers with the organization, but they're like, we really enjoyed your stories. I think that's when I realized, because socially, yes, it did. I was like, maybe I just know how to put words together.
Yeah.
But professionally, when it's appreciated, you're like, maybe I'm onto something here.
Yeah, I was going to say, because for you, your background, I mean, it's in public health. So like you deal a lot with like data, which for the rest of us who are non-data people, we're like, that sounds so heavy and like intense and like so many numbers. So like, I guess someone wouldn't think that brain of yours, because I guess most people would assume you have more of a scientific or mathematical, analytical brain. I guess maybe someone wouldn't peg it to lean onto or to become more like creative writing or any other form of writing.
And I agree with you. Even I didn't think, because I found myself in, you know, research, and then it led up to monitoring and evaluation, which is what I do. I didn't think initially that those two could pair. Mm. But as time went on, even in research, even in the different spheres I've been in work, you have to narrate the numbers. The numbers have to tell a story.
That's true.
And that's when I realized, I was like, the numbers have to tell a story. Because I would always be asked at work, and why do you deal with numbers? And the simple answer is, somebody needs to give a story to the numbers. Someone needs to translate that, because numbers alone don't tell a story.
Exactly. And I think even in your industry, like, there's plenty of other people in the different departments who aren't necessarily, you know, data or even the funders themselves. So having a story around it also helps them to understand what's going on, like on the ground, and what's happening, what the data actually reflects.
Absolutely.
So that's really cool, though. You know, like from all of that to creative writing, let's talk about how did bedtime stories in the Kafue National Park come to be? What sparked it? What inspired it?
What sparked it was a trip to the Kafue National Park, a holiday, a break. I was asked to give some feedback on my experience. I ended up writing a two-piece story that appeared for the first time in Kwazi magazine. Mm-hmm. I started writing for the magazine as a freelance writer. But then I realized two things. The audience were adults. Mm-hmm. One, how could I create for the audience that really has my heart, children? Mm-hmm. Secondly, how could I... So my children didn't know that I write.
I was about to say, like, this is... I'm sure if you've listened to the previous podcast, you know Togo and I were related, so I know her children. So, you know, you bring up things like, oh, and do you know about mommy's article or whatever? And people are like, what do you mean, mommy's article? Mommy writes what? So let's get into that.
Yeah, so, and it's funny. It wasn't that I was hiding the writing from them. It's just so many things consumed. And I don't know what they think those magazines are that are racked up on the bookshelf. But I just never opened to show them and say, look, that's mommy's article. But I wanted to leave something for my children. Because like I've shared, the past year, there's certain things that have happened with between the children and I, or with the children and I as a family, that shifted our perspective on certain things. And it was just a chain of events that really honed in on life is short. What can you leave your children? What moral compass can you leave them? What guidelines? If I wasn't here tomorrow, what can my children run to say, I'm in this situation, I'm facing this. What would mom do if she was around? Mm-hmm. And yes, it was such a strong factor. It just moved me to say, you have to leave something. Tomorrow, if you're not here, what can the children leave to? Because we work hard for our children, yes. We love our kids. Materialistic things are great. But I feel like that's something they can hang on to and pass it on to their children as well.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, it's a legacy. It's something it's more than just it being physically tangible in a book. It's the essence of you, really, like written on those pages and whatever. And it's kind of like a love letter to them.
Yes.
So the book itself is great, because I mean, obviously it's for kids, but we often talk about like how we have poor reading culture and we say that people don't really read anymore. I always find it funny because we're always talking about our own peers, right? But at the end of the day, if our age mates are not reading or have poor reading culture, that trickles down.
Absolutely.
In the home, or even if you're not necessarily directly a parent, mm-hmm. any children in your life or whatever, they also start to notice, like, oh, reading isn't important. Like, people are into screens more than they are reading these days, you know, and actually picking up books, or even if it's an ebook, reading one of those. So what are your, like, thoughts on that? Like, how do we navigate that? Like, this is your book that you've written. You also write for Nkwazi. Are you driven somehow by this?
Yes. And I'll try to answer your question from the beginning to end. I strongly believe that the best way to teach our children is by our actions and not by what we say. I think it's the strongest motivator. Action is the strongest motivator and not words. And so I have on purpose not bought a Kindle. And everybody laughed at me. You know, when the Kindles came in, everyone was shifting to Kindle. Oh, you can have so many books on it. And that's great, and that's true. I wanted my children to see me reading hard physical books. And it took me being intentional, where I would take time on purpose. Mm-hmm. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got something to do. And it's great for people who read articles on their phone. There's nothing wrong with that, or who read books on their phone. But with a child who wants to mimic you, it's really hard to tell that you are reading a book.
Yeah.
And so that's why you see all those books like on my bookshelf right now. And like even I'll give you an example today. My son's finished all his, you can see he's obsessed with Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Oh,
so that's why you see so many of them.
I've seen one of the movies. I don't know if they've released a full series, but I've seen the one movie. And I know it's such a popular book with children.
Yes. And so on purpose, I have not forced him on what kind of book he should be reading.
Like the genre.
Exactly.
You're not pushing, I want you to read more science books because I want you to be a doctor one day and brainy.
No. And so he said,
that takes the joy out.
It does.
If you are enforcing. Like, I think reading should be a discovery for
Absolutely.
Every individual, whether you're a child or adult. You need to discover and like sample all these different flavors, if you can call it that, and figure out what's really for you.
Correct. So today, after church, he says to me after brunch, he says, "Mommy, I've finished all my books. Am I going to get another one?" And I said, "Of course." And so we passed through the bookstore. And I said, "You need to pick which book you want." And he says, he goes around. And obviously we get back to Diary of the Wimpy Kid. And he says, he's so excited. And he's showing me how he chooses the books. At the back of the book, there's a sequence. So we're filling in the gaps with the books that he doesn't have. And I told him, he says, "Mommy, I can't wait to have all 19 books." And in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, he's going to finish my finances. I'm not even going to have money for bread. But I was like, and I said to him, I said, "If you keep your books well, we can sell your books and you can put that money in your savings and we can use half of it to buy other books." And he's like, "Yes, mommy, and I'm going to have this collection." And it's understanding the likes of your children and playing into that. My daughter is very different. She wants to be a veterinarian, doctor. And she loves books on animals. So we have the animal books there, as you can see. We have... she told me what I didn't know what this animal was. I don't know how to say it properly, and I'm a bit embarrassed. But it's a walrus. It's a
walrus.
Yeah, it's a walrus, and I can't say it because she was saying a walrus. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly. Is I didn't know what that name, the name of that animal was. Truthfully, I didn't know.
Yeah,
and she was like,
"You don't see many of them in Zambia specifically. Like maybe if you've gone to certain beaches in Cape Town, maybe you've encountered one, whatever, but it's not a common thing. We're used to our big five."
No, exactly. And she's like, "Mommy, you don't know what a walrus is. You don't know." And I was like, "No, Mama, I really don't know what it is." But that's what excites her. Animals excite her. And those are the kind of books that we pick for her.
Mm.
And my son was asking me today in the shop, he says, "Mommy, aren't you buying yourself a book?" And I said, "No, I haven't finished my book. And until I finish my book, I can't get another book."
Which, again, that's another lesson that you're teaching them. Like, if you're going to start something, let's see it through. And then that's when you get to reward yourself with a brand new book again or whatever. You know, I don't know if that's why you're doing it.
That's what it is. Because you can't start buying new books when you haven't finished what you have.
Or like, it's also teaching you not to complete things. And I think nowadays, even with adults, we live such a rushed life, where we're moving from one thing to another, even with tasks at your job. Sometimes you're finding you're not fully completing.
Oh, please
so
don't
get me. You move on to the next one. Someone comes in, you're like, "Oh, that seems very urgent. Let me start that." By the end of the week or whatever, it's like you've got all these halves of things that have been done, but you don't have anything that's complete, which causes more chaos, you know. So yeah, I like that philosophy though. Like, finish your book and then we can get you a new one.
Yes, and we have a rewarding system in our home, is that for every book that is finished, one thing is that you write the words that you don't understand in the book. They've got these little notepads there. Well, they're not notepads, they're not that these blank books. So
I'm stealing ideas today.
You have to. So they've got, both got their own individual dictionaries because of their difference in age. But it's telling them, it's not so much about finishing the book in a rush, because I notice sometimes my son would rush to finish the book because he knows that there's an allowance at the end of the book. But it's learning the new words, learning to apply that in your vocabulary, expanding your mind. What was the lesson in the book, which is what we're going to come to Kafir National Bedtime Stories. Bedtime Stories from the Kafir National Park. And it's also, what new words have you learned? And how often do we as adults just cruise through books? And I asked somebody, what book are you reading? They said, I don't know. I've forgotten the title and the author. I was like, are you really reading the book?
Yeah, adults do that a lot. It's quite scary. And then I'm like, you're distracted.
Yes.
You should be able to say, I'm reading X and X by this person. But I actually noticed the other day reading to two kids that when I was reading the book with them, one, because it's his book, obviously understood the story better and the words. And then his cousin was tripping up a little bit. So I was like, okay, let me help you. Let's say, pronounce that word out. Then I was like, okay, do you know what that word means? And I didn't realize I'm doing kind of like what you're saying to do, but I want to actually get into the whole. I mean, they're still a bit young, but when they're able to like properly write or whatever. But even just having that conversation, do you know what that word means? Oh, it means this. Or being able to find like even a picture on my phone, yes, or whatever it is, and be like, this is the thing that they're talking about there. Because I feel like then they really understand the story. I mean, what's the point of reading something and then you didn't understand things?
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Your stories remind me of the old parables that we grew up with as kids. Like, there's a lesson in each one of the stories. Correct me if I'm wrong. There's 4 stories in the book.
Correct.
I have read the book, people. I've also bought the book and then I keep handing it out like a Christmas present to every child.
It's so good.
Like, no, guys. Now I don't have a copy. I need to rectify that this February. But can you tell me one of your favorite stories in the book and that has a message that you're most proud of? Or you can't pick because they're all your children.
That's difficult that you say that like your favorite story. That's a very hard question.
Okay, what's one message, a message either that you really resonate with or that you feel like a lot of people, you've done a few readings now.
Yes,
at
I
this
have.
Point, in galleries, at school, so kids have had a chance to interact with the work itself and with you. What are some of the takeaways then?
Okay.
Maybe that's a better question.
No, the first question was fine. I was just racking my mind, like, which one's my favorite? Which one's my favorite? But I think all the stories have a really important lesson at the end. But maybe this time around, I'll share with you about Mavuto, the vegetarian hippopotamus, right? And one thing I like about this story is hippos don't eat meat. We know this, that they don't. I tied in a story to make sense of why they're vegetarians. It was just me being creative. But the story about it, if I'm to summarize, it's a story about friendship. And it's a story about being there for one another. So Mavuto, he's a beautiful hippo, and he's got a certain challenge. I don't want to give out all the juice. He has a certain challenge, and he's best friends with a crocodile. Ooh. And yes, so it's a couple of things here. He's friends with a crocodile who is a different species from him. So that in itself is that the people that will come across in your life are friends to help you, may not always look like you, act like you, and be like you. And so we should be open to accepting, we should be open-minded to accepting people as they are.
Yes.
You know, as they are, because yes, they both did live in the water, but a hippo and a crocodile are two very different animals, even in size. But even though the crocodile was much smaller, even though they are dangerous as well. The crocodile was able to, Madaliso was able to help Mavuto with his challenge by consulting, obviously, the elders, and they sought a solution to the problem that he had. For
so
me,
it's about community. It's about, like you said, working together, friendships, yeah.
And also, at the very end of it, Mavuto, who was the hippo, when he was helped, he stuck to his end of the agreement that he had promised his best friend and the elders. And to this day, hippos don't eat meat because of that same agreement.
Oh, I love it. Guys, you definitely need to pick up this book. We'll get to where you can find the book and how you can get it. But I think that's such a lovely way. And I also just wanted to like point out, your stories have, obviously, this is a Zambian kids' book, one of very few. I know
a couple,
maybe of a couple, but we don't have that many of them. And I love the fact that you're using Zambian names.
Thank you.
I love the fact that you're allowing children with those names. I mean, of course, it's not like you can put all everybody's names in there, but kids with those names like feel empowered or special or seen, because we don't often see our names in books.
No, we don't.
I mean,
we don't.
You don't come across that. You're not reading, you know, any other fiction and seeing your name there. And just imagine what that's going to do for like these kids who are like, oh, that's my brother's name. That's my best friend's name.
Yes. So the story also, in addition to that, it's about friendship and being selfless. Mm-hmm. And so the crocodile, who's Madaliso, didn't have the challenge that his best friend had, but he went above and beyond to find a solution for his friend. Teaching people in this, teaching children and adults who read to their children, there are times where we should help other people even when it does not benefit us.
Mm-hmm.
In a world or in a culture where we're becoming so self-driven in that it's about me, me, me. Mm-hmm. If this doesn't benefit me, I'm not going to help. Can we just go back to the old times, you know?
And also where we are so quick to really highlight differences and make that something that's negative, something that's not good. Like, oh, that person is so different from me. Oh, I could never be friends with them. Oh, that person is so, you know, really nitpicking at those things instead of being like, what could I even learn from someone who's different from me?
Exactly.
And also, why should someone being different mean that we can't be friends or we can't relate on some level? Because oftentimes, the things that we're going through in life, this life, it's experienced by us. Obviously, I'm talking us as humans, and there's a lot of shared experience that we have.
There is.
Of course, there's differences because, you know, we have different colors of skin and all those other complicated things. But at the end of the day, we all want the same things. We all crave love. We all want human connection. We want community. We want family. We want that kind of thing. So, I mean, we're actually more alike than we are different.
We are. And when you said the takeaways, I received a message, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, from somebody that bought the book. And they went with the book with their family to Kafue National Park. And her children were saying, Mommy, look, there's Mavuto the hippo. That did something for me. It did something for me. It did something to me. Her children were calling the hippos by the name they had read in the book. Yeah. And that they hadn't read it immediately. It was after some time, like after a couple of weeks. And so the takeaway is everybody will take something different from the book, but that the child could remember the name of the hippo. You know, and that's good for memory because now you have this association.
Yeah.
So it's going way more or way better than I thought it actually would.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about, obviously, family structures and community, it's like something that we've discussed in the past. Like, you know, morals don't just start at home or in school or at church or any outside, like, specific environment. Like, the way that kids sort of navigate this world or operate in the world, a lot of the times it's a reflection of us as the adults who are raising them. So that's if you're the parent or whatever, the, what do you call it, guardian or whatever of those kids, it's really a reflection of you. So, like, what kind of things can you, or examples can you think of in your life where it's really just inspired you to be, I see you as a very compassionate person, I'll say that. I think you're one of the, like, friendliest. We've always joked, you're going to get stolen one day. I think I might have said it in the last podcast you were on. Because you will go and say hi and make friends with people that we've never seen, never met. And I'm like, no, stop doing that. But, like, yeah, that's, like, a reflection of the essence that you are. But, like, what was your upbringing like that formed some of your morals or the way that you see the world?
I'll go back to referencing... our children are a reflection of us, and I'm in agreement with you because you just mentioned that statement. And it's so funny. I find it so funny when parents say, my son or my daughter is so badly behaved. I wonder where this is from. This is from school. No, that behavior is a reflection of you. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that as parents, and we don't want to do the work. Because a child that is badly behaved, where do you spend most of your time? At home. And are we willing to have this self-reflection to look at ourselves? Mm. Children that hit other children is a reflection of violence.
Yeah, what's going on in the
children that use swear words.
I mean, yeah, they're not learning it in the playground with from the other children. They're learning it from adults and likely at home.
Swear words is from home. Stealing. We've all had, I think, experiences with where our children have not come home with certain things. Theft. That's a reflection of people that take, parents that take other people's things and don't return them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, growing up, I really thought my parents were hard on me. And I think you and I used to have these conversations.
Yeah, I mean, gosh. I still have flashbacks to certain moments where I'm like, they were being hard. I don't care. But no, they did shape us into the good people that we are. And I don't say good as, like, other people aren't good. But I just mean with they shaped our morals. Like, there's just certain things you and I are incapable of doing or wouldn't dream of doing. Like, if I borrow, as simple as if I borrow a toy or a book from someone, I'm going to return it.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to hold on to it. It's not my property. I said I would like to borrow it. Borrowing means you have to give it back. Yeah, that's how I was raised.
That's true.
Whereas nowadays people, oh yeah, I know, I brought that book from you. Then I gave it to Tinder. Then I gave it to, then that one gave it to David. Then David gave it to Rachel. I don't know where the book is. I'm like, no, that's not right.
It's not. And going back, I'll take you back to two incidences, very specific, maybe three, sorry, I hope we have enough time. So quickly, I'll tell you two from my mother, one from my dad. My father was a finance person. So he was an accounts manager for the different firms he worked for and managed. Dad would give us money and he would send us to buy something from the shops. And he wanted a receipt and change. I just never understood what the change was for, regardless of how small it was. And I asked him, Dad, why do you need the change and the receipt? Why, you know what the price of what you send me to buy, if it's bread, if it's milk? And he always said, my daughter, it's not the act, it's the principle. Mm. It's the principle. To this day, I have receipts and I
also keep receipts.
But it's the principle.
I mean, I keep those two, but anyway, that's another podcast.
It's the principle of returning what the change is and accounting. Mm-hmm. Very recently, we had a family bereavement, and I was put in charge of receiving finances and drawing up the budget. And I remember saying to someone, oh, this money I've used is from here, here. They're saying, why are you giving us all this information? I said, for transparency. Mm-hmm. You need to know. There are the pictures of the receipts. Here's everything and the countdown. You know, the breakdown, sorry, not the countdown. So that was my dad with a finance background. My mother, I remember one day we went to there was a famous chicken place at Long Acres when we were young. Mm-hmm. I think food fair used to be such a big thing back then. I think you remember. Mm. So we ordered a couple of, I think, quarter chicken and chips. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget. It was me and my mom. I think it was quarter chicken and chips. And we had driven. We drove off. We carried the chicken and the chips. And we drove off. And we used to live in the farms back then. We had moved. And you won't believe that. I don't know what made us stop in town. And then we happened to check. I think I was hungry. We checked, and they had put a full chicken with chips.
Ooh, but no, I know. Mom was like, no, no.
You will not believe that my mom made us drive back to Long Acres. Mm. And I tell you that the staff were so confused. They said, ma'am, it's already been taken.
It's cooked, yes. You've taken it. At this point, we were ready to cut our losses.
We can't take it back. We can't take it back. And they just said, thank you so much for your honesty. I didn't understand why my mother troubled herself to drive all the way back.
Yeah, because even you saw how excited I got. I was like, ooh, chicken.
You know?
That's how most of us would think.
That seemingly small act has changed a lot of things. Similar things have happened to me, and I've always gone back to that point that she did, you know. We're believers in our faith. I grew up in a home that believes in God. I believe in God. My mother tithed. She tithed, and she always said, this is God's money. And as a child, I was given offering money. As an adult, who didn't have both my mother and my father, in university, I used to take my bursary. I was on a bursary, and I used to tithe 10%. And to this day, I tithe. It's because of what was instilled in me as a child that that's God's money. I'll be thieving and stealing from God if I take that money. And my kids were asking me today, Mommy, did you withdraw the offering money? Because I'm so poor with cash. But I can already see that. You know, they said, oh, do you have offering money? You've given, I had given my daughter, and my son now comes to the big church with me. Do we have our offering money? It's all of these things. And not to say we are better than anyone else.
No, it's but, just your way and the way that you were raised. And it's your parents' legacy working through you. It's the things, it's how you also want to raise your children. There's no judgment about that, I don't think. I mean, if someone wants to judge, I think that's coming from a different place. Separate podcast once again. Perhaps
yes.
Therapy.
I'm telling you before.
But you know, it's part of how you just want to instill these morals and values in them at such a young age, and also be consistent with it as a parent, which is the tricky part.
Tricky.
Because we're doing so much, or we feel so tired and drained, it's difficult to actually just be like, no, I said I'm going to be consistent. Let me stick with it. Something as simple as going to Sunday on a church. Sometimes you wake up, it's a rough Sunday.
It is.
Maybe you did something the night before. You're out late, or you've just been working really hard and your body is sore and your mind is foggy and you're like, I'm going to go today. Then you also have to think now, This is not only something that I do because I have to or whatever. It's something I do because I want to.
Absolutely.
And I need to for my spirituality. And then even for my kids. If I start nitpicking, if I start going every other week, then what am I teaching them?
Yes.
You know? And consistency is key in life.
It is.
Thrive in anything. I just wanted to also go back to the point I'd made where I said your book has the Zambian names in it. It has obviously the Zambian setting.
Mm-hmm.
How important do you feel in a more general way it is for Zambian stories to be written and published? Especially like for the children's space. Like I mentioned earlier, I know a handful.
Mm.
Perhaps some of you are out there, please, even in my podcast comments, respond and like let us know where your book is, whatever, because, I mean, I love to support local authors.
Mm.
Maybe I just don't know about your book.
Yeah.
But, how important do you feel that it is?
I feel that it's very important for the owners of their story to tell their story. Why do I say this? Let's go back to our education system when you and I were in school. We learned history. We learned our history.
From another person's perspective.
Exactly.
Or other group of people's perspective.
Exactly. And we know that every story has a side to it. Mm-hmm. And it's so unfortunate, maybe because of our lack of, in our history, our lack of keeping the folk stories were told
orally.
So yes.
We do more oral storytelling historically than of the written, or even sometimes it's paintings, so like the cave paintings and things, but someone has to still narrate that picture. Like, I can't just walk up to it and understand fully what the cave painting is. So yeah.
Exactly. So we've been raised and brought up, and even if I asked you today about history, you will give it from a textbook, that has not been written by someone who experienced it, but maybe someone who visited this country and compiled experiences from different people. It's very important that we, the owners, tell the story from our experience, from our perspective, to our communities, to our children. I think that's as close as you can get to the truth. Whilst we do appreciate other compilations and other perspectives, it's very important that the owners tell the story as they see fit, because that is the story that will be carried on for generations to generations.
That's true. And part of our oral storytelling, literally, it died off because the same elders who would sit us around and tell us those stories, they died off. And also then the younger generations just became interested in other things and maybe forgot those stories or didn't write them. I know, like in my family, we have my now late uncle who passed away last year. He used to write a lot of our family history. He did like a family tree. Like,
that's beautiful.
To all the elders. So like I can trace my roots to my like Zulu roots from the Kumalo side of the family to know like where I came from and whatnot. And even growing up, my parents, because we're Zimbabwe and every time we traveled, they would incorporate, there's never a time, even if I've been to the museum maybe 17 times in my life, I would go to the same like stops, the museum, the Chinoy Caves. We also did a trip to Great Zimbabwe, but they would then be there and like trying to teach us something.
Yes.
And then even ask us in the car on the way back, like, what did you learn? And if there was like curios to buy, you buy a curio. If there's a little book about the place, you buy a little book. Just to try and enrich some of that. Not saying that some of those books, I mean, at that time, a lot of those Zimbabwean stories were actually being told by Zimbabweans. So the books that I had, I wish I still had them. I mean, I remember I was showing you some books.
I love those.
I
love those pictures.
That publisher doesn't exist anymore, whatever. Like, you have to buy things online, maybe that are older copies and things. But like, just the way that they raised us like that had such an impact on me in terms of even just understanding and knowing who I was. Because yes, I grew up here in Zambia, but my parents always made sure that I never lost touch with the fact that I'm Zimbabwean.
Yeah.
So it's always funny when people are like, oh, but you're Zambian. And then I'm like, I'm Zimbabwean. I'm not denying anything about Zambia. I love Zambia. It's where I've grown up. But I'm like, guys, I really seem and identify myself with being Zimbabwean.
Absolutely.
Just because of what my parents enriched me with. From the language, to the experiences, to the stories, to my history, to my heritage. So I think, yeah, like work, like whether it is a kid's story or something for teenagers or something for adults that's written by us for them, I think it has so much power.
It does.
Because I think everyone wants to walk around feeling like they understand their culture, their heritage, having an identity.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. And sometimes actually there's people walking around, even though we are African, we're proud, we have culture, we have these things. We live in a more westernized society where people might not be in touch with those things. And you know, they might feel a little bit lost. So I agree. Important for us to take charge of the narrative.
Absolutely.
So your book,
mm-hmm.
self-published. Let's get into that. Because I have one other friend who's self-published two books, but she's a poetry author. It's a huge financial undertaking, from the printing, distribution. I mean, what was the... Was that the only way or the best way to get this book out? What exactly happened for you?
So let me tell you how it was. Mm-hmm. I had the stories. And I reached out because, as I mentioned, I do freelance write for Nkwazi magazine. I reached out to some editors and the networks. And every person that I came across told me that they are not able to edit a children's book because that's not a genre that they were familiar with editing or could reference me to somebody who had experience editing that genre. It was quite painful. And frustrating. I did interact with somebody who had a skim through for grammatical corrections and things like that, and naming a local writer who did help me, but unfortunately we weren't able to get to the next stage. And so what I did was I went online, and I went to South Africa and I started like online South Africa. I was searching because it's a closer country in Southern Africa.
Yeah, and they have developed a lot of publishing houses. There's a lot of authorship there.
Yes.
They're in the publishing industry, definitely more advanced than
Zimbabwe. Absolutely. So. I just went online and I started writing emails. I was going on different websites, and it was very risky because I had no one who was a reference. And so I spoke to a couple of people, and I met a lady, and they told me, and they said to me, this is Boutique Books in South Africa. And they said to me, we can edit your book, and this is the invoice. And I was so afraid. And I took a risk. I sent them the money, and they professionally edited the book. They put it in formats for me to upload on Amazon, formats for me to print. They connected me to a printer in South Africa. They sent my work there. The level of professionalism that this organization had, it would take something for me to move from them.
Wow.
And they were so understanding because they realized I was a first-time author with a lot of fears and questions. Never once did they seem irritated or not engaging enough. The turnaround time on the deadlines was as was given in the work plan. We had an issue. I contracted a Zambian because I believe in supporting local to do drawings for me, and it was a nightmare. And I had to contract someone from India for the illustrations.
Who ended up doing that?
Someone from India. Yes, that's the one who did the illustration.
They're very beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Another great visual element. For those of you listening, you'll know when you pick up the book, okay? So, that's another thing. I hadn't actually thought about it. I mean, obviously, I've read the book. I've seen the illustrations. But I know you're not an artist.
I'm not.
How do you find someone and then you're not able to sit physically together? To sort of whether it's work on it or for them to get a sense of what you want, you have to explain everything either via email or through a meeting. Like, that must have felt so scary.
It was.
You don't know what you're going to get.
And all the services online, you have to pay upfront because people have taken other people for a ride, which is what I understand that. And I'll tell you that there's so many times where I almost gave up on this. But the driving factor was I've already started it. I've already invested my own savings. And something has to come out of this. It's expensive. It's time consuming. There's back and forth as you go. But I believe the more you do it, the more seamless it becomes because you've learned the lessons and you know what to do, how to do it. And you have a structure from you've got something to reference in the past. It's no easy task, but like, how badly do you want something? I went online I just started going and looking at people's
you
work.
Took a chance, yeah.
I did.
Yeah. And you did the best research you could do with the resources you had. And look what happened. It's an amazing product.
Such
at the end
a
of it.
Blessing.
I mean, it's also so incredible that we have things like the internet and we're able to sort of find these resources.
Speaking of which, the internet is great. The question is how you use it.
Yes, no, of course. Mm-hmm.
I think we all know this. Mm. We like to make excuses, and it's not like I had $1 million in my bank account. It was every salary I had, I would take out a small percentage to go towards my book. I had started saving for a while.
Wow.
But it's that, how badly do you want something? It always comes down to that.
I was going to say, because it's not about, oh, I just happen to have this money lying around, whatever. It's you took a leap of faith. You invested in yourself and in the dream. And that also takes a lot. And you stayed committed because, yeah, you can give up. But then also giving up, you spent however X amount of money and then you decide to give up. Like, why? Like you said,
yeah.
You'd already started.
Yeah.
Wow. So then printing. So this book is not locally printed, I think.
Initially, it was printed in South Africa, in Cape Town. That's where the first two batches came from. However, it was cheaper to print in Cape Town. However, freight costs. It's quite, it's by weight.
Yeah.
And so found lovely people, Reprographics, that were able to replicate the quality. And also, printing out of the country, you have no control over time.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what was killing me because I had so many orders of the book. And you're telling people, oh, it'll be in the country in 3 weeks' time. Mm. It wasn't something that was sustainable for me in the long term with the demand of the book. And yes, we found a Zambian company, Reprographics. Shout out to John. He's an amazing person.
You're giving us all, everyone, guys, I'm taking notes. I hope you're also taking notes because it's just like, okay, so we know who can help us edit. Now we know who
exactly.
can help us do this. You're actually, like, it's great, though, to be able to be open enough and, like, share some of that because
exactly.
I'm sure there's people listening who, they have something written, but it's tucked away and they're like, I don't know where to start from.
Yes. Customer service has been amazing. They were able to replicate the quality and it's so comforting to have someone in the same country, same town, who you can say, I need X amount of books, and they deliver them directly to me or even to my suppliers. They've done that for me. They delivered straight to Book World when I was I was committed with something.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of service and dedication to their clients is commendable.
Wow.
Mm.
That's incredible. So, yeah, we touched on it earlier. You've done things like the Zads Market just now, you've mentioned Book World, you've done some readings. What, other than obviously your friends' kids now saying, look, there's Mabuto in the water when they see a hippopotamus, what are some of the other responses that you've had from the kids or maybe even the parents?
Wow, from the parents, I must say it's really been received well. I now know a number of children who have written, they've got written material of books they would like to publish, and they are now referencing their children to me in terms of if I could help mentor and guide their children, look at their materials. I also have adults who are inspired and encouraged to write. There's children are so creative.
Oh, wow. So you're actually encouraging a whole new generation of writers. It's not
yes.
just that the takeaway is the lessons and the morals. Now there's people who are like, oh, but like I want to write, or I've been doing this, I just don't know how to go about it.
Exactly.
That's
so
amazing.
I've had children say would like to meet you. I mean, sorry, parents mentioning their children that I could encourage them to take on this creative aspect, which I think is brilliant because I feel like 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's no, you have to be an accountant, you have to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Parents are becoming more and more open to other career paths that were not
true.
That were not thought to be a right career path at the time, like a professional career path. And I'm really proud of the parents that are doing this and that see something in their children and are, creating a safe environment for their children to be supported. other things in the book where children have shared comments. They love the graphics. They're like, it's so colorful, and you can see the child putting their finger on, you know, the red ant. And apparently I've received great compliments about the cover because it's engaging, and it gives you an idea of what you can read. More so, I think books were believed to be developed by people not locally. I should say this. Giving people the permission that they too can do it, you know. I think that's something that's not addressed enough. Permission that you can read books from local people. It's as good. It's exactly. Because there's this that, thing that in our thing minds.
It's as good.
Yes.
It's just as good. Good. It's not less. You've proven the quality, the level of engagement, the storytelling, it's all on par with the other books that kids are reading, you know?
Yes.
Someone doesn't have to pick and choose, oh, is it going to be this one or Diary of a Wimpy Kid? It can be both.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been a beautiful start to a journey. I believe this is just the beginning. It's funny, you put something out and you realize it's amazing what you can learn from other people. It's things I never thought of that people will come and say to me, can we do this? Can we collaborate on this? We heard we are doing this. It's amazing when you just give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance. You'll be amazed at the things that will unfold for you.
So you just said this is only the beginning. What is next for Togo Zile as a writer? It's the pressure. I'm sure everybody.
It's a lot.
When is book two? Is book two going to have four stories again? Is it going to be longer? Is it going to have 10? Are we sticking with children? Are we? So, yes, what is next in whatever way you feel comfortable sharing? Because I know creativity is a journey. You might
it
not
is.
Even be, what's next? Because you're still in the throes of like doing publicity for this.
Yes. And I'll answer your question how best I can answer it. I'm not a liar, so I'm not going to commit to anything that that I can't do. There will be another book. I received great feedback that this is four stories in one book, and that it was engaging and not too long and not too short. Based on that feedback from my clients, who are the children, I would like to build up on that. I would also like to, the intention is to have a series about the Kafue National Park. I'm waiting to put my coins together, travel and be inspired, because you know, writers, we are really inspired by experiences, by disconnecting. I would like to do that. I feel that it will come to me on a trip or travel again. I think that's all I can commit to. I can commit to a second book.
Well, it sounds fabulous. I mean, I know that your little readers can't wait. Some of your big readers, some of us also can't wait. We enjoy reading the book with kids. Like, for me, it's something that's just like, it truly is so engaging. I have a friend who I gifted her son the book for, and we've read it together, and just to see how his eyes light up and he's like, Mommy, we've been here, because it's also a place that they know and can recognize. Well, these are animals that they know, maybe they've seen. Or if they haven't, it's now making them excited to be like, wait, Kafue National Park, that's here. Let's go, parents. Take us on an adventure. You know, and you and I grew up having a lot of those adventures,
yes.
Whether it was going to Kariba and whatnot. So we've grown up seeing wildlife, and we know like how important that is, how impactful that is, also how peaceful nature is, you know? So like, I absolutely can't wait. Where can people find this book?
The book can be found at Bookworld, and the specific stores are the Manda Hill Outlet Mall and at East Park. The book can also be found at Lusaka Collectives. They have three outlets, Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. That's at the International Departures. They have a store. They have a store at Lusaka National Park. They also have a newly opened store at Agora Village. That's along Tawombeki Road. El Mercato, hope I'm saying it right. El Mercato at Leopards Hill Mall. The book can also be found at Kuzipa Campsite in Chongwe.
Oh wow!
Yes.
Okay, so it's also there.
Mm-hmm.
And then online for those who might be listening in from the UK, Australia, wherever.
It's on Amazon. You can have a paperback version or a Kindle version, depending on your preference. That's available. Yes.
All right, so guys, please make sure that you look for Bedtime Stories from the Kafue National Park. Everything will be in the details. The book is by Togo Zilengwenya. Where can people find you on social media?
On Facebook, Togo Zilengwenya. On Instagram, you can find me as your lover in all things nice.
Yes, and if you want to know more about that particular Instagram, you can go back to a previous podcast where I interviewed her about that page and everything that she does on there. It's quite a diverse range of things that she put, content that she puts out there.
Yes.
Togo, I just want to say to you, I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Not to make anyone in this room cry, your parents would be so proud of you. My dad, who's your uncle, has been so proud of you. We are all proud of you. We love
you. Thank you.
And guys, please, please, please support a local author. We keep saying we need more local authors. We keep saying we need to support local creatives. So let's actually put our money where our mouth is. And let's visit Mandahill Bookworld and Bookworld at East Park Mall. Hit up Amazon, all the different places that she's mentioned, and get yourself a copy of Bedtime Stories from the Kafue National Park. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.